Life Goes On. Written by Ank. Read by SBL. Fandom, The Untamed. Relationships, Jin Guangyao, Nie Mingjue. And Lan Xichen, Jin Guangyao, Nie Mingjue. Rating, Mature. Summary. Many years have passed since the coffin slammed shut at Guanyin Temple. When Jin Guangyao and Nie Mingjue awaken on the cold floor of a cave far from any known place, it is up to them to find a truth so they can figure out who brought them here and what their intentions are and how Lan Xichen fits into all of this. Chapter 1. Meng Yao wakes up with his face in the dirt. Everything hurts. He doesn't remember what happened, but perhaps he... Meng Yao sits up searching for a memory in his mind which could give him a clue what could have happened for him to end like this. There is nothing. He moves with caution and scans the area. Calm yourself, he thinks. Deep breaths. The surroundings are unfamiliar to him. A cave, perhaps? The floor is dirt and the walls roughly hewn from stone with little care for craftsmanship. He doesn't understand where he is. Panic settles in his belly, but when he hears something or someone behind him, he shoves it deep down inside and takes a long breath before he turns around. A man crouches by a fire pit. A large man, hair tangled and unkempt. He looks relaxed, body not taut, waiting for someone to attack him. A sight that allows Meng Yao's mind to ease, at least a little. If the person doesn't expect an attack, it would be within reason to believe there is no immediate threat. Regardless, the situation is too precarious for Meng Yao to lower his guard.
You're awake then,
he says without turning, still focusing on the fire, which he is coaxing to life with great care. His voice is raw and deep. It matches his outside, Meng Yao thinks, an odd feeling in his belly.
I am,
Meng Yao responds. He can't give away that he remembers nothing.
How long was I asleep?
There is a long silence. Once the fire flickers sufficiently high to not require shielding, the man responds.
A while.
The hitch in the voice. Meng Yao recognizes it. The man isn't lying, but he hides something. He reaches for his hat. Meng Yao should have a hat? He isn't sure why he thinks that. There is no hat. His hair feels tangled and filthy. His clothes presumably are, too. He moves his arms to push himself standing and hits the ground with surprising force when his arm gives out under him. No, his arm doesn't give out under him. His arm is gone. Panic wells in his chest and belly as he tries to think through this. The fog in his mind thickens the harder he tries to pull memories from it. Meng Yao can't panic, not when he is alone with a stranger. He needs a weapon. He needs some way to.
You don't remember either, then,
he says and looks at Meng Yao. Meng Yao stops mid-motion and stares at the man. He cannot admit it out loud, but it does not matter. The stranger nods knowingly.
I woke up over there,
he gestures toward a pile of wood.
But I don't remember how I got here or anything. You were still asleep, so I let you stay that way until I figure out what's going on. Of course, you woke up before I did, but at least there's now a fire.
It's a lot to process. The stranger speaks so candidly about their situation where Meng Yao would have tried to obfuscate as long as he could. But this man just allows himself to be so vulnerable and open. Meng Yao reaches for his shoulder. He doesn't hurt. His hand doesn't come away bloodied. It must not be a fresh injury. How long was his arm missing? Was he born this way? Did he lose it? He doesn't understand. None of this makes sense.
There are a few provisions,
the man tells him.
Right, mostly, but I haven't explored further than this room.
There are more rooms? Meng Yao asks and looks around. There is a doorway leading into darkness and a doorway leading into light. Outside, he figures, but he doesn't ask it out loud. He doesn't want to know. He wants to believe that they are in a place that is meant for humans to live.
I think so, the man says. Didn't want to leave you alone in case you woke up and tried to bash in my head. You're tiny, but you look tough.
He laughs, standing up to pour hot water into a bowl. The words sink oddly into Meng Yao's belly, and he feels nauseated, staring into the distance. His breath catches wrong. He isn't sure when the other man joined him, but he can feel him close. So close, they used to be close. Who used to be so close? He looks up at the man, whose eyes are warm, with a flicker of concern lingering in his gaze. He crouches down beside Meng Yao and offers him the bowl of water. Meng Yao isn't sure why this awful dread seeps through his belly and into his bones. His fingers twitch, and he tries to breathe evenly, but it only comes in ragged gasps.
Hey, you okay?
The man just reaches for Meng Yao's hand, a touch he would never allow, but in this state of heightened panic, he feels frozen, unable to pull back his hand. A painful flash of white lightning tears through his vision and sears through his body when their skin touches. The man's grip tightens around Meng Yao's wrist, and maybe he feels the same surge course through him. Meng Yao cannot ponder the implications before the visions of his life flash before him until he loses consciousness. The world is dark the moment Jing Guangyao finds himself dragged into the depths of the coffin. He can hear the lid slam shut, can hear the coffin seal itself with the resentful energy that surrounds them, churning, roaring, but contained. Forever. Forever. Never to see the light of day again. Jing Guangyao will die here. He will die choking on his own resentment. But he isn't afraid. He never has been. Death does not frighten him. Nie Mingzhe's fierce corpse does not frighten him. Jing Guangyao did this to him, killed him, slowly, tried to control him, dismembered him, and buried him. There is no space in his heart for regrets when Nie Mingzhe's massive hands wrap around his neck. They're so cold, Jing Guangyao thinks. Detached, closing his eyes, and lets the resentment wash over him. Nie Mingzhe feels rage, feels so much rage, and trapped inside the coffin with Jing Guangyao, he no longer has to contain it to spare his brother's life. The rage rips through him, rips through Jing Guangyao, their hands on each other, fiercely tearing at flesh and bone while resentful energy courses through them both. He hates him. He hates Jing Guangyao more than he's ever hated anyone or anything. And Jing Guangyao gives in kind, unafraid as he's always been, fighting with everything he has. They remain like this, a turbulent typhoon trapped by the inscriptions of the coffin, forever to look peaceful on the outside while the blood flows within. He will kill Jing Guangyao again, again, again. Nie Mingzhe doesn't wish for peace and rest. He will fight. He will fight for eternity. Time passes vaguely, measured only in the pitiful remainders of life and death. Countless times they kill each other. Countless times they wake, not quite alive, but their bodies unmarred. Nie Mingzhe does not care and wraps his fingers around Jing Guangyao's throat again, throttling him. He wants to choke him, sever his head and keep it as a prize like Jing Guangyao has done with him. He wants to rip off his head with his bare hands, tear Jing Guangyao to pieces until there is nothing left. Jing Guangyao fights him fiercely, nails and kicks, but yet impotent against the weight and strength of Nie Mingzhe. He whimpers.
Good, Nie Mingzhe thinks.
Beg for your life. Beg for it. He wants to see the fear in Jing Guangyao's eyes. But Jing Guangyao whimpers again, eyes fluttering shut. And then he can feel it, the tiny movement of Jing Guangyao's hips.
It isn't fear.
Jing Guangyao has never been afraid of him. Nie Mingzhe should tear off his head right then and there, but instead, he laughs. Jing Guangyao getting off on his own death fits too well. Nie Mingzhe grips his throat tighter and shifts. A choked moan comes from Jing Guangyao's lips when Nie Mingzhe rocks against him.
I'll rip out your heart when you come.
Nie Mingzhe means his words until Jing Guangyao comes. Eyes rolled back into his head at the edge of consciousness, body spasming with the force of his peak. The sudden orgasm that rips through Nie Mingzhe takes him by such surprise and with such force, he snaps Jing Guangyao's neck and the world fades into nothingness. They both wake again some time later, their wounds healed, but there is no immediate attack. They look at each other in silence for a long time. He looks so young, Nie Mingzhe thinks, without his hat, hair cascading down in a tangled mess. Nie Mingzhe remembers how he looked like this, sprawled out on his bed after a long day of briefings. How he smiled at Nie Mingzhe after being thrown onto it, no fear. How Nie Mingzhe wrecked him and he only screamed for more. Never fragile, never afraid. The betrayal hangs heavily between them, but neither of them is moving yet to resume their fight. Nie Mingzhe should break his neck again and allow himself for peace until they eventually wake up again, but he does not. He reaches out to Jing Guangyao, but instead of wrapping his hand around Jing Guangyao's neck, he cups his face.
Already tired of killing me?
Jing Guangyao asks. And Nie Mingzhe can't tell he's fighting the urge to lean his face into the touch. Curious.
You could have left,
Nie Mingzhe growls, but doesn't move.
They were strong enough to save you. Perhaps I did not wish to be saved,
Jing Guangyao says, a soft but sad smile playing around his lips.
Perhaps I was not meant to rot in a cell or in exile. Perhaps it was better to die.
Nie Mingzhe looks at him for a long time, but he says nothing. The resentful energy which fueled him does not return, no matter how much he wishes for it to do so. He wants to continue the unrestrained rage, wants to continue painting the inside of the coffin with their blood and viscera. It will change nothing. They will return to how they were every time they wake up. And maybe that is how things need to be between them. Maybe that is how they can only ever be between them now.
Why?
Nie Mingzhe eventually asks, though he is not entirely sure what he means. There is a long silence between them.
Why?
It hangs in the stale and dusty air.
So I could live,
Jing Guangyao finally responds. Nie Mingzhe closes his eyes and lies down beside him. He remembers Meng Yao, so concerned with making a good impression at all times. And he remembers how people have treated him, the hushed whispers Nie Huaisang told him about when he came back from the cloud recesses. All their choices hang between them, and despite the utter lack of space, they couldn't be further apart than the chasm inside their hearts.
You could always live,
Nie Mingzhe eventually says.
You were my second in command. And yet, I was seen as nothing more than your plaything. At best, an entertaining diversion, and at worst, your whore.
Nie Mingzhe says nothing for a long time. It is strange how clarity comes to a man long after things have happened. In his life, his goal was to live honorably, no matter what a person's background. As long as they proved themselves, they had the right to stand as equals. He thought of Meng Yao as his equal. His merit was invaluable and eventually his own stubborn views prevented him from seeing the suffering in Meng Yao. And once he became Jing Guangyao, he could see nothing in him at all. Closed off, the last time he saw a genuine emotion from him, he remembers the tears. He remembers how Meng Yao was willing to die for him. And he sent him away, replaced him with Nie Zhonghui within days, unwilling to spare him another thought until they met again.
"You broke my heart,"
he eventually says. In the end, that is the truth. His rage, his anger, yes, driven by righteousness, but in the end, it always came back to the terrible pain he felt in his chest and belly every time he thought of him. Jing Guangyao eventually replies with a voice raw, not from the violence between them, but from the emotion behind it.
"And you broke mine."
End of chapter 1. Chapter 2. Meng Yao wakes up with his face in the dirt. He blinks, trying to get his bearings. He can hear someone retch in the distance. Is he back at the brothel? His stomach churns when he feels a hand on his thigh, but he cannot will himself to open his eyes. Someone lifts his head and puts something soft beneath it. Perhaps someone drugged him. At least, he thinks, he will not be conscious of it. Perhaps a blossom of hope deceives him, but he believes he can hear a guqin before he drifts off again. Jing Guangyao wakes up with his face resting on soft silk and a large hand on his shoulder. His bare shoulder. His heart beats rapid quick in his chest while he tries to understand the situation without giving away that he has awoken. The hand is rubbing his skin, but it doesn't feel sexual or sensual. If anything, it feels methodical and a little too rough.
"His car seized,"
he hears a gruff voice tell him.
"The solve is to help them stay supple. Only you would think that you could massage them off my body with brute force."
Both of them pause. The hand on his scar stills, but then continues. Gentler. A tender touch which Meng Yao almost forgot.
"You hit your head. You must think of someone else."
They are pretending, then. Jing Guangyao has to admit that it is tempting to pretend nothing has happened between them. To pretend they did not tear each other apart in life and in death. Eventually, they will have to face what they have done to each other, who they have become, but the hand on Jing Guangyao's shoulder is still more tender than it was before. He remembers all the times Nie Mingzhi has given him massages, and it felt like he was trying to tenderize him for dinner rather than work out knots and aches. But with time, Nie Mingzhi learned to be less brute, or rather, he learned to be gentle when asked. They knew each other so well back then that during night hunts, they barely even needed to speak to communicate. They would night hunt together, do paperwork together. Fuck? No, it was always more than that for both of them. There's a pain in Jing Guangyao's chest that he wishes to ignore. A churning in his belly. Regret.
"You are right,"
he says softly.
"Everything is still confusing."
Nie Mingzhi hums in agreement. A contract between them. A truce. But also something else. Something perhaps neither of them can truly understand just yet. Nie Mingzhi continues to massage salve into Jing Guangyao's scars. He's right about the scars feeling seized and tight. The massage feels nice. And when he finally pulls away, Jing Guangyao moves his shoulder. The range has improved. It won't grow back his arm, but he shifts and his entire spine cracks and settles. He feels lighter, tension leaving his body.
Scars affect all of you, not just where they are,
Yan Mingzhe says, and closes the lid to the salve and stands to put it away. Scar salve? This all feels too convenient. Jing Guangyao pauses for a moment to find his center before pushing himself standing. He has fought Yan Mingzhe for a long time with but one arm, and Yan Mingzhe remembers, he knows he does. Jing Guangyao is still a formidable enemy to have, but Yan Mingzhe turns his back to him. A dozen implements Jing Guangyao could use to injure or even kill him, but Jing Guangyao doesn't entertain the thought more than acknowledge the possibility. Instead, he looks around the table. So many things here. Writing brushes, art brushes, utensils, books Jing Guangyao doesn't recognize, books he does, medicines, music.
Someone lives here, he says. There are food stores, all of this, supplies, books.
A truce in which they both pretend.
Do we live here?
There is a long pause. Perhaps Yan Mingzhe is thinking twice about their truce, or perhaps he knows something that Jing Guangyao doesn't, but he replies before Jing Guangyao's thoughts spiral away from him.
I do not know,
he says, and Jing Guangyao is so surprised that he sounds confused. He should know whether they live here.
If it was our home, should we not remember it?
He says, testing the waters. But they remain still.
If we were invited, why would we be alone?
Yan Mingzhe responds and turns back around with a parcel of cured meat and dried fruit.
If we were captives, why is no one guarding us? And if we invaded this home, there would be a sign of struggle.
Jing Guangyao says, and carefully sorts the music scores.
Unless we snuck up from behind and killed them without ever being seen.
Yan Mingzhe looks at Jing Guangyao, and Jing Guangyao thinks he has some nerve testing the truce in return. Very well.
You are the size of a house, and I have one arm.
He chuckles at the thought, and it's a genuine bemusement.
It would be difficult for us to sneak up on anyone like this.
It wouldn't be, but he will hold their truce. Yan Mingzhe hums and finds two plates.
There is a stove outside,
he says when he slides a plate of dried fruit, meat, and bread toward Jing Guangyao.
I will put on rice and boil water. If we are indeed welcome here, there should be tea somewhere.
Jing Guangyao nods. The truce holds, then. How long has he gone without tea past his lips? Certainly too long if Yan Mingzhe is mentioning it. Tea, he thinks, and looks at the shelving. It looks carved straight from the rock in rows and rows of small square spaces of varying depths. There is some low wooden shelving tucked against the wall. However, the boxes and containers on it are old and dusty. Unlike everything else in this room, everything looks relatively new, like someone placed it here for them to find. If the tea is in those dusty boxes, Jing Guangyao does not want it. He looks around some more, rifling through things as he finds them. While he searches for tea, he may as well look for information. And in that moment, it dawns on him that this may have been exactly what Yan Mingzhe intended for him to do. To look for clues to what happened to them while he looks for tea. There is something in his chest he can't explain, but he swallows around it and continues his search. He finds the shelf with tea only with the help of a stool. Whoever carved these must have anticipated only giants lived in this place. The tea smells fresh and fragrant when Jing Guangyao opens the box and for a moment, He feels overwhelmed with conflicting emotions rushing through him. He closes his eyes and breathes through the sudden onslaught. He takes a breath and straightens himself. He finds a tea set on a lower shelf. It is... He pauses when he thinks it looks familiar. It's been a long time since he has had tea. He knows as much. They were sealed in the coffin for a long time. Long enough that they should have rotted and turned to dust, leaving nothing but bones saturated with resentment. Jing Guoyao doesn't feel like a corpse, and he will not investigate these thoughts further. He sets out two cups, every so often catching himself, still reaching with the arm no longer there, but he manages well enough. He has always been adaptable. Nie Mingjue returns with boiling hot water, and the cave fills with the delicate scent of tea. Expensive tea. They look at each other. Who would keep such fine tea in a cave? But then again, who would keep such an expensive tea set? And clothes? Jing Guoyao's eyes fall on a travel chest full of clothes. He glances to where he woke up, and there is a blue and gray jacket folded into the shape of a pillow. He didn't imagine that part then, but he finds no evidence there is a guqin kept here, and the music scores weren't for one. While he remembers his past, the present is still a conundrum for them to figure out. It surprises him that Nie Mingjue sips the tea first. Does he not suspect it might be poison? Jing Guoyao takes a sip in return. Perhaps it is for the best that they both die again, enjoying tea. The tea is not poison, and they eat and drink in silence. There is comfort in the warmth of rock heated from within. Did someone carve everything in this cave out of rock? He wonders. And if they did, why?
There is enough food to last for a while,
Nie Mingjue says eventually.
More than enough stores of rice to make it through the winter, but I will look for tracks. Perhaps hunt a deer or catch some rabbits.
Jing Guoyao nods. Perhaps they can gather berries and mushrooms and grasses, forage for variety in their diet. It is strange how quickly they settle into their little pretend truths. They explore the cave further and find another room, one locked and no key to be found, and the other with a massive bed. A bed large enough that they can sleep together in it without touching. Nie Mingjue still offers to sleep on the floor until Jing Guoyao presents a very convincing argument, which for the most part comprises,
if it were but a cot, I would tell you to sleep on the floor, but it is not. There is enough room for two of each of us.
It does not ease all of Nie Mingjue's worries because he does still insist on sleeping on the side facing the door. Jing Guoyao lets him have this, and they eat a dinner of congee with reconstituted meat and mushrooms. It is plain, but it is better than Jing Guoyao has eaten in a very long time. Perhaps he has eaten nothing since Guanyin Temple. Before he can protest, Nie Mingjue has served him a second bowl, which to his embarrassment he also devours. He catches something in Nie Mingjue's eyes when he catches him watching Jing Guoyao eat.
It must have been too long since I last ate,
he says with an apologetic smile and tries to slow down a little. He still ends up with a third helping, which he finishes too. It feels uncomfortably familiar, how he went days without eating before Nie Mingjue took him in. And then when he made a bit of coin, he would eat as much as he could.
Then you will eat your fill,
Nie Mingjue says and pours them both more tea. Three bowls are Jing Guoyao's fill. He feels sluggish and exhausted, and a certain level of regret that he has eaten so much, it is making him feel less alert. But he finds he does not care. There is nothing Nie Mingjue can do to him he hasn't already done. And the truths they've agreed upon, this play of pretense, this farce, is holding strong. He excuses himself and realizes he will have to change his clothes for bed. He finds something suitably thick in the travel trunk and excuses himself to the room with the bed. Should he be so at peace with all of this? No, of course not. As soon as he is alone, more memories flood back. Memories of Lan Qichun's face, of how willing he was to die with Jing Guangyao, with Nie Mingzhue, with them together. He wishes to believe that Lan Qichun recovered from the pain he's caused him, but he will never forget the look on his face, the shattered heart etched into it so deep. Jing Guangyao doesn't truly believe anyone could ever recover from such pain. What he did was unforgivable. He bites his tongue to stem the burning in his eyes. They were choices he made, and now he has to live with them. When he goes to wash his face, Nie Mingzhe is filling a brazier, also dressed for bed. His hair now hangs down his back in an artfully woven braid. Jing Guangyao tries not to contemplate the state of his own hair. He will see to a bath tomorrow. For now, washing his face and chewing on a piece of willow until he is too tired to keep standing will have to do. The world fades into a grayish white. To his relief, he doesn't faint. Regardless, he can feel Nie Mingzhe's broad body beside him and a steadying hand in the middle of his back.
"Rest," he says, and guides Jing Guangyao to the bed. "It is safe to sleep."
It must be, because Jing Guangyao falls asleep the moment he lays his head on a proper pillow. Nie Mingzhe awakens in the middle of the night to a soft noise beside him. For a moment, he doesn't remember where he is and whispers out to Huaisang. No, Huaisang isn't here. He doesn't even know if Huaisang is still alive. Guilt mixes with the pain he feels and the relief in his heart. What could he tell his little brother to explain? That he has fought Jing Guangyao for ages and now he has found himself too exhausted to continue? That perhaps after all this time he can see what Jing Guangyao has been trying to tell him for so long? How could he possibly explain when he himself still does not understand what is happening to them here in this cave, or how they got here? He has tried to look for the coffin after Jing Guangyao fell asleep, but all he could find were a few boards which could be part of a coffin. He cannot bring that up in the morning. They have agreed to continue living under the pretense that they do not remember. He remembers, and he knows that Jing Guangyao remembers everything. What happened to them? The horrors that caused each other? He remembers every injury inflicted, every time he killed Jing Guangyao, and every time Jing Guangyao killed him. The noise repeats, and he turns. On the other side of the bed, Jing Guangyao remains fast asleep. Not curled in on himself, how he had expected, but sprawled out on his back. His hair is a mess, his limbs tangled in the blankets. For a moment, he wonders if Jing Guangyao is having nightmares. But then he hears the noise again. A soft whistle followed by a soft snore. He almost laughs out loud when he looks at Jing Guangyao, former chief cultivator, man of many horrors and uncountable terrors, laying in this bed beside his worst enemy, snoring softly. Snoring and sleeping. They both have been sleeping. Do corpses sleep? Perhaps this is the first time he has asked himself that question and slowly moves under the blanket and fabric covering his legs. He can see faint lines across his thighs, but they are not angry stitches holding him together. No, these are scars. Fierce corpses cannot scar. Yamingzhe lies back down and doesn't fall asleep again until much later. When he wakes, he is alone in bed, and then he realizes what woke him up this time. The sound of something heavy scraping over the ground. He stumbles out of bed to find Jing Guangyao dragging a tub across the stone floor. Yamingzhe is mildly impressed that he has used a belt slung around his intact shoulder to drag the heavy wood toward.
Where are you going with that?
Jing Guangyao, for the first time since Yamingzhe has known him, startles.
Duh!
He breaks off and corrects himself.
Gah, I am filthy and I stink. I require a bath.
The, and so do you, hangs silent between them.
If we must share a bed, we shall do so clean from now on.
Yamingzhe thinks that is a good arrangement. A bath means they can look around the place more, but Yamingzhe pauses in his thought.
Why did you not wake me?
The smile he receives is nigh apologetic, like he caught someone who just could not help themselves. And perhaps that is what happened. Jing Guangyao couldn't help himself and needed to investigate, to snoop, to gain an advantage over the situation. In another life, Yamingzhe would have thought that to be reprehensible and without honor. Now he understands. Jing Guangyao needs to survive. Anything else is collateral damage. He appreciates that Jing Guangyao does not attempt to explain further, but returns to dragging the tub across the floor.
Where did you even find that?
Yamingzhe asks, and fights the urge to simply swoop in and carry the tub and Jing Guangyao toward the fire together.
In the locked room,
Jing Guangyao says.
Well, it is no longer locked.
Yamingzhe scoffs, but it feels oddly fond.
Find anything else?
Yes, but if I do not bathe immediately, I fear I will try to escape my skin.
Will you let me carry the tub for you?
Yamingzhe asks, but doesn't yet move. Please, just ask for help, he thinks. There is a pause. Something skitters across Jing Guangyao's face that Yamingzhe cannot place.
Very well,
Jing Guangyao says, and slips out of the belt.
I will make us tea before we use all the hot water for the bath.
Yamingzhe carries the tub to the fire with relative ease. He does notice he isn't as strong as he remembers, but he doesn't understand what's happening yet. Perhaps while Jing Guangyao is in the bath, he will take it upon himself to find anything that could help him understand within the room that Jing Guangyao so unceremoniously broke into. If there was anything to give him the advantage, Jing Guangyao in all likelihood has already taken it. There is a level of mistrust Yamingzhe cannot block out of his mind. He is emotionally exhausted, and this truce. They cannot keep it up forever. Jing Guangyao smiles at him when he pours hot water into the teapot.
Or can they? Would it be so bad to spend their time like this together pretending they remember nothing?
Xi Chen. The thought cuts through the bliss and Yamingzhe feels ill. Is Xi Chen even alive still? How much time has passed? How long has he spent not thinking about Xi Chen only to now... No. He exhales a slow breath and pours hot water into the tub. By now, Xi Chen must have moved on from all of this. Yamingzhe hopes he has found a good wife, and who blessed him with many children. He also hopes that, perhaps sometimes, he still thinks of him. He wonders if Asang ever found a wife. His inclination was not toward women, but he understood filial duty. He hopes his brother found an arrangement which worked for him. Yamingzhe is no longer part of that life. He and Jing Guangyao died. If anyone else they know is alive, They should avoid them until they better understand what's going on. Nothing is to be gained by attracting unwanted attention and questions as to the nature of their existence.
Memories?
Jingwaya asks as he walks up beside Niemingzhi and offers him dried fruit. Niemingzhi shrugs. He can't lie, but he also doesn't want to talk about it to lead either of them to have to lie. So far, they've made it 2 days without lying and scheming.
I understand.
And Niemingzhi believes him.
I found this in the other room. He continues and holds out a paper talisman which keeps water warm.
The handwriting is familiar to Niemingzhi, but he can't be sure.
Perhaps you would like the bath after I am done?
Niemingzhi nods. He would appreciate a bath and some time to think without being disturbed. And of course, he will do the same for Jingwangyao. Once the tub is full, he returns to the cave. But before he can get there, Jingwangyao calls out to him.
Wait, he says, and looks a little embarrassed. I did not dress myself, and I cannot open the buckles on the back of the belt. Could you, please?
Niemingzhi isn't entirely sure that Jingwangyao actually requires the help. But this is twice now he's asked for it, and for Jingwangyao that's something Niemingzhi never expected he would hear from him again. So he nods and unfastens the belt with care.
If you need help with anything else,
he says before he can stop himself,
call for me.
Niemingzhi walks off when Jingwangyao nods. He looks at the door, still slightly ajar, and wonders what secrets wait for him on the other side. He stands in front of it, but finds it difficult to go through. Someone locked it for a reason, and if he walks in there, what if he finds things he will regret finding? There can only be so many bathtubs and hidden talismans stored in there. He reminds himself that Jingwangyao has already been in the room and has seen what it contains. Niemingzhi doesn't allow his hesitation to grow roots in his fears and doubts, and, with a sigh, he steps through the door. There isn't much here. A dusty shelf with some books, a simple cot, a brazier, some writing utensils, and piled against the wall, a bunch of wooden planks. He recognizes the wood. The red seal even broken up. It was their coffin, dismantled and hidden away in this room. In a trunk, he finds torn clothes, old and stained beyond repair, noticing a peony motif stained with blood. Their clothes when they'd fallen into the coffin. He closes his eyes and sits in silence. The past is the past. He no longer is that man. And perhaps he never was. Perhaps it was always the saber spirit twisting him until it was but a memory of himself. He reaches within himself, but he cannot feel a core, only remnants of spiritual energy. Perhaps that is for the best, because what they have done to each other cannot continue if they have no cause for the resentful energy to destroy. He sighs and leaves the room without investigating further, and as he leaves, he closes the door. A choice he is making to leave the past behind. End of chapter 2. Chapter 3. Days, then weeks pass, and Niemingzhi falls into a rhythm he didn't expect was possible between them. He remembers how close he and Jingwangyao used to be, how many times he had relied on him as his second in command, but also emotionally whenever Huaisang ran off in a temper, whenever Niemingzhi felt like the world was becoming an impossible burden. Logically, he knows they can work well together. Of course they can. However, after everything that happened, even under the guise of not remembering anything, he would have expected to be on guard more than he finds himself to be. This is the man who murdered him. Yet the fantasy is too alluring, too tempting for him to outright deny himself this indulgence in a game of domesticity. He has to believe that Jingguang Yao feels the same, that perhaps they've both changed. They cook together after Nie Mingzhe brings home a pair of rabbits. He saved their fur for processing later. Winter is coming, and it may help keep them warm. Autumn is already here. Morning's crisp and clear, but not yet cool enough to see their breaths. As the leaves turn, Jingguang Yao walks in the forest more often, collecting mushrooms and other things to be prepared for the winter. In the beginning, he would wander further and further, no doubt scouting the area, but he never once tried to leave. Perhaps there is no one, or perhaps there is no one either of them wishes to encounter. It surprises Nie Mingzhe how easily they both adapted. How much he enjoys Jingguang Yao, who smiles at him with dimples when they eat dinner together, who gratefully touches Nie Mingzhe's arm after he filled the bathtub for him. And perhaps they both blush softly when Nie Mingzhe accidentally finds Jingguang Yao half-dressed. It could be like their past never existed, if not for the soft gnawing Nie Mingzhe still sometimes feels in his belly, despite the decision he made. Most days, he spends helping get their cave ready for the winter, doing the heavy lifting, but when he is alone, in the quiet hours of the morning and the night, his thoughts drift back in time. She turns soft, concerned smile, his heartbroken face, haunt Nie Mingzhe. He knows he is not alone. Jingguang Yao still wakes him almost every night with Xi Chen's name on his lips. And Nie Mingzhe is not sure that he ever wishes for it to stop. Perhaps his worst fear is forgetting Xi Chen altogether. They can leave their past behind and shed themselves of anger and resentment, but Xi Chen? Their only connection to a life long since past, and perhaps the only connection to their own humanity, Nie Mingzhe knows neither of them will ever let him go. That night, he sleeps fitfully, pulled under by vague, shapeless nightmares he cannot grasp in any senses but deep and primal fear. He wakes many times, bathed in sweat, staring at the wall. He drifts off, half asleep, half conscious, watching Jingguang Yao sleep, brows furrowed. Nie Mingzhe reaches for him, tries to smooth his brow, but before he can lean close, the gentle notes of a guqing guide him into sleep once more. This time, his dreams are calm and blissful, filled with laughter and light, with soft touches and shared kisses. And in the morning, a soft whimper awakens him. Ayo, he thinks, still addled by the haze of sleep, and does as he used to so many times. He reaches to pull him close against his body. He's all Nie Mingzhe has left.
Daga?
The whisper is barely a breath, but it has been so long that Nie Mingzhe's fingers dig in a little tighter, almost possessively. He says nothing, and Jingguang Yao says nothing in return. They both have acknowledged the moment in their own way, and Nie Mingzhe relaxes deeper against the pillows, to doze a little longer before getting out of bed. He must have drifted off, because he awakens once more to the warmth of breath against his lips. he doesn't open his eyes. But Jing Guangyao must have noticed because he doesn't press forward. But he also does not pull away. The moment hangs between them for a heartbeat, silent anticipation of what Nian Mingzhe knows will break their truce. If he kisses Jing Guangyao, neither of them will be able to pretend anymore. Neither of them can... Before he can finish the thought, Nian Mingzhe feels soft lips slide against his. The kiss is surprisingly soft. Instead of devouring each other, they now savor the taste. The soft press of lips, the sleek slide of an inquisitive tongue. Nian Mingzhe wraps his arms around Jing Guangyao and allows himself to melt into the kiss. And then, with a final tender press of lips against his cheek, Jing Guangyao slips from his embrace, and by the time Nian Mingzhe wills his eyes open, he is no longer in the room. Breakfast isn't awkward, but it is more silent than it has been. Though Nian Mingzhe thinks it is a comfortable silence, he also thinks they need to talk about what happened, need to clear the air between them. Nian Mingzhe opens his mouth to do exactly that.
After breakfast, I'll check the traps in the river for fish.
Internally, Nian Mingzhe groans at his own cowardice. Jing Guangyao looks confused for a moment. His face doesn't fall. It melts from confusion into contentment, and then he breaks into a smile until his dimples show. Nian Mingzhe cannot help but return the smile. Perhaps they do not yet need to talk. Perhaps they still have a respite before they need to face the truth.
I hope you find plenty. It has been a long time since I had delicious fish.
Jing Guangyao says and finishes his tea.
There are a few mushroom patches from which I'd like to harvest to dry while the weather isn't too damp.
This is when Nian Mingzhe should kiss him. Tell him he better be careful. However, he does neither of those things, and instead, and perhaps rather awkwardly, moves to gather his bags and outer clothes. He pauses when Jing Guangyao calls for him, but then just shakes his head.
Never mind. Good luck!
Luck, it turns out, was exactly what Nian Mingzhe needed because the traps caught enough fish for them to have their fill at dinner. He transfers them into a bucket to kill and clean on the river bank when he feels an odd sensation prickle in his fingertips. And then he can hear Jing Guangyao's voice, carried clearly with the wind.
This isn't a joke, Daga!
It isn't, because Nian Mingzhe is nowhere near him, and that alone is enough to alarm him and rushes out of the water. He drops the bucket on the sandy bank, racing toward where he believes Jing Guangyao to be. When Nian Mingzhe makes it to a clearing with a mushroom patch, he can hear the grunt and howl of a beast.
There is no time to wonder why a beast shows itself after so many weeks with no signs of one.
He can see Jing Guangyao now, close to the ground as he spins in the other direction of an attack, just in time, raising his arm to protect himself from the beast's long claws. It hits him hard. The weight of the beast by sight alone far exceeds Jing Guangyao's, but he somehow rolls out from under the swiping paw and slashes it with his dagger. There is a screech of pain. Nian Mingzhe springs into action when Jing Guangyao skitters across the forest floor with a hard swipe of its paw and slams against a tree. The beast snarls and whips its tail. Jing Guangyao scrambles out of the way and Nian Mingzhe searches for a weapon. The large branch he finds is nothing compared to Baxia, but it will have to do. Jing Guangyao is panting heavily. Neither of them has seen battle for a very long time. When Ding Guangyao flips the dagger in his hand, Nie Mingzhe jumps into the middle of the clearing.
Hey! Pick on someone your own size!
He shouts. Nie Mingzhe stands tall. Though perhaps he is not as intimidating with trousers rolled up to his knees and skirts still tucked into his belt, collar hanging open, and nothing but socks on his feet. Ding Guangyao gets back up, pushing himself against the tree for leverage. Nie Mingzhe nods, gripping the branch. This is a proper test of just how well they still work together. The beast screeches and charges at Nie Mingzhe. He expects them to clash, expects to get in a heavy punch at least. He does not expect the beast to spin and swipe him with his tail, sending him flying across the meadow and slamming into the ground hard enough to knock the air from his lungs. Nie Mingzhe coughs and spits up blood. Before he can shout for Ding Guangyao to stay back, the other grips the dagger tight and pushes himself off the tree with his shoulder socket. Nie Mingzhe's vision swims as he fights to stay conscious. This isn't how this ends. This isn't how this is supposed to end. They didn't wake up from the horrors of the coffin hole once more for this to be the end. Nie Mingzhe fights to push himself sitting when he hears a scream when Ding Guangyao jumps off, aiming his dagger at the beast's throat. It moves too fast, and Ding Guangyao's own momentum works against him, and he slams against a rock. Nie Mingzhe can hear a sickening crack upon impact. The world spins, and Nie Mingzhe has a difficult time focusing his sight. He can feel bile creeping up in his throat. He swallows around it. The beast is still there, ready to attack again, and he has to protect Jing Guangyao, who probably thinks the same because he lifts his trembling arm, still clutching the dagger. Nie Mingzhe almost snorts with amusement when Ding Guangyao somehow finds words to taunt the beast to keep its attention on him. Nie Mingzhe fights through the nausea washing over him, but his vision swims. He reaches for the branch. If he can get to it, he can distract the beast, give Ding Guangyao a chance to land a deadly blow. He vomits blood again, collapsing to the floor when he notices the large gash across his belly. Oh. The beast charges. Nie Mingzhe collapses onto his back. The sound of music cuts through the air. A guqin, Nie Mingzhe recognizes as his vision fades white. Lan Qichen runs his fingers over the strings of his guqin and sends another strike toward the beast. His priority has to be that. He can't think of Ding Guangyao dazed against the rock or Nie Mingzhe laying in a pool of his own blood. He can't. If he does, the beast charges again, and this time Lan Qichen lands. Against all odds, Nie Mingzhe has pulled himself upright again, holding his belly with one hand, the branch with the other. Stubborn old man, Lan Qichen thinks, and sends another cord before landing between them and the beast and draws Shuo Yue from its sheath. His heart beats heavy in his chest, but he sends a talisman toward the beast and follows with an elegant parry and thrusts the blade through the beast's heart. The sounds it makes rattles his bones, and then it collapses into nothing but ash and dust, resentful energy vanishing into the air. Nie Mingzhe groans and falls down to a knee. An icy fear cuts through Lan Xichen's chest, and he rushes to his side, rifling through his Qiankun bag. He can't let this be the end. He didn't do all this for them to just...
Qichen,
Nie Mingzhe presses out, and Lan Xichen has to swallow around the knot forming in his throat.
Aya, the Gu,
he says, and forces himself to smile a little. He finds the herbs he needs and presses them against the wound. Nyamindra hears us. Muscles tensed with the pain, but it is only temporary, and eventually, he exhales a heavy breath.
Better?
He makes a surprised noise when Nyamindra grabs him and pulls him into a kiss, which is more awkward than it isn't. Teeth clicking, wetter than either of them means it to be. But it doesn't matter. It's Nyamindra. It's Daga. And he is alive. He truly is alive. He deepens the kiss, pulling away only when he hears a soft whimper coming from Jingguangyao, who has slumped over.
He is hurt. I will tend to him,
Lan Xichen says, and moves Niamingzhe's hand over the herbs.
Press this here for a while longer. We will bandage it properly soon.
To his surprise, Niamingzhe only grits his teeth and nods. Lan Xichen rushes over and kneels beside Jingguangyao, feeling his wrist with two fingers. His pulse is weak, and what little spiritual energy he possesses is waning. Lan Xichen closes his eyes and, with great care, transfers some spiritual energy while checking for any cuts or bites, but he can see none. He hopes he is right, that there is no hidden wound into which the beast's venom seeps unseen.
He tried to save me,
Niamingzhe says. How he appeared so suddenly to stand beside Lan Xichen is unclear. At least he has the decency to still press his hand against his belly, keeping the herbs in place. He sighs wistfully and crouches down on Jingguangyao's other side. Lan Xichen understands. He too remembers when Jingguangyao was still Meng Yao, when he wasn't desperately trying to hold his position to survive. They've all changed since then, perhaps so much that they return to who they used to be before the war. Lan Xichen doesn't press him to finish the sentence. He understands what Niamingzhe means. The past, their past, was so full of pain and despair that it felt insurmountable. And perhaps it was. If Lan Xichen was sure they would give each other a chance, he would not have brought the coffin here. He would not have cast a memory talisman to allow them to exist without the burden of their past, at least for a short while. They deserve that respite to be at peace. They deserve that second chance at life as just Ayao and Daga, as just two men trying to figure out who they are. He smiles and nods, transferring more spiritual energy. He doesn't have much left, but it will be enough to strengthen Jingguangyao to heal.
He should rest in bed for a while now, he says, after he has examined his injuries one last time. And then I will bandage your wound. None going to fix me with some spiritual energy and call it a day.
Lan Xichen gives him a look and, to his own relief, Niamingzhe laughs heartily and then groans, holding his belly, asking for no further explanation. Lan Xichen sees the exhaustion in his eyes when he picks up Jingguangyao. But what he doesn't see, the long, lingering look Niamingzhe gives him when he carries Jingguangyao to the bed.
I went to see you sit right beside him,
Lan Xichen says, with a soft smile that allows for no protest. He pulls a bandage from his bag and presses the herbs tightly into the wound before wrapping it with care.
It will feel a lot better in the morning, and I will apply a fresh poultice then and you will rest. I'm here now to take care of you. You were here this whole time,
Jingguangyao says, voice drowsy.
That's what the other room was.
Lan Xichen can't answer. His chest feels too tight for all his emotions. He knew they would figure it all out eventually, but he hoped there would be more time before they did. It never was his plan. Once the coffin was underground,
all meaning left his life. He wanted to die with them, and Jing Guangyao denied him that. He was angry and withdrew from life until he might as well have died with them. It wasn't until after Nie Huaisang became the chief cultivator that he could no longer stand to be among the living.
Is that why we are whole again?
Nie Mingzhi asks.
Fierce corpses do not bleed, especially not ones that were previously dismembered.
Lan Xicheng can't help the choked sob escaping his throat. He stayed with the coffin for weeks that bled into months, which flowed into years until time lost all meaning. He pored over books and Wei Wuxian's notes he stole from the forbidden part of the library and studied them until he found a melody to dispel the resentful energy in both of them. Lan Xicheng would have gladly given his life to see them whole and well again. But then one day the coffin opened, the array no longer sensing resentful energy to steal away, and in it, both Nie Mingzhi and Jing Guangyao slept peacefully. He did not give his life to them, but he gave his golden core, sacrificing his strength and longevity for them. Now he possesses little more than a few threads of spiritual energy where his core used to be. Just like them, he has returned to an unmarred state. A second chance for them all.
We missed you,
Nie Mingzhi whispers against his ear. Lan Xicheng exhales a shaky breath when he can feel Nie Mingzhi's massive arms wrap around him, and Jing Guangyao plays soft kisses against his shoulder. Neither of them asks further questions. Maybe they don't need to. Maybe this is all the closure they needed to accept him back into the life they built for themselves here. They don't ask why he wasn't there when they woke up. They don't ask where he has been all this time. Nie Mingzhi gently tilts his chin so Jing Guangyao can capture Lan Xicheng's lips in a tender kiss without straining his injuries. They really do work well together, Lan Xicheng thinks with a smile, and allows himself to be pulled onto the bed. Finally, rest. The end.